Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Hey, kids, do you like wrestling? Well, we like wrestling, too. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Myself and Chris Novembrino kind of doing a lazy river of wrestling criticism, going through the news and whatever happened in stateside television wrestling. And also, you know what? Sometimes we just like to watch old stuff and talk about that, too. Love for you to give us a listen if you haven't already. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. Made no rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game, better bring your A game. Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game.
Hey, now it's the Mike and JD show, and I'm your host, Mike Gilbert. And this week, JD is out. He has got wrestling. They got a tournament out of town, so he's traveling with the boys. So he's probably jammed up in a hotel room with a bunch of, you know, 15, 16, 17-year-old dudes. So I'm sure the testosterone is flying high there wherever he's at. So I decided to go ahead and bring back my boy, my homie for life, BQ of the Impact Lounge, man. How you doing, BQ?
I'm good, man. I'm good. He's out there doing getting involved with some real wrestling, right? Not the not the phony shit we're about to talk about.
not the bullshit. He's actually like a pretty high level high school wrestling coach. He's not the head coach, but he's been an assistant coach for probably 20 years. Once he graduated college, he actually wrestled in college. Was a pretty decent level college wrestler and has been coaching basically ever since then. And like their team is really good. They go all over the place and travel and do a bunch of big tournaments in other states and stuff like that. And he's had a lot of really good kids come to the program. So he's doing big time stuff over there with that wrestling program in DeKalb, Illinois.
I was wearing my, I have an NWA t-shirt I wear. And every time I wear it in public, someone's like, "Oh, do you wrestle?" And it catches me off guard every time because I think they're talking about like pro wrestling. I'm like, "Oh no, I'm just a fan." But every time it's because the logo was like two guys grappling. So they think they think I have a picture of myself in a singlet in my house somewhere. So I'm like, no, not.
So you never did like amateur wrestling in high school or anything like that?
No, man. I was tiny. I wasn't like short, but I was really thin. So never got into anything like that. I was in band. I was a band geek.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I was in band in junior high, and then I decided that I wanted to play football instead. I honestly, like my knees and my shoulders and my neck and back, wish I would have stuck with band because I was actually pretty good at it. And then I ended up, I also wrestled in junior high and in high school, but I was not very good. So when it came to my senior year, I was tired of getting my ass kicked. I said, I'm not playing any more sports. I picked up a skateboard instead.
There we go.
But yeah, man, I'm excited to have you on. The TNA crazies are already in the chat. They know BQ is here, and BQ has always got that 411. So, but this is not a TNA show. However, because it's me and BQ, we both got, I would say, you know, humble brag, probably the top two TNA podcasts out there. Maybe not numbers wise. There's probably like Fightful's probably like beats us in numbers. But I would say like quality, I would say it's, you know, number one, BQ, number two, Mike Gilbert, in that order for life. I would say we probably give it the best coverage. I do probably the most in-depth coverage of TNA. You get the backstage. Yeah, I get very granular with my coverage, like Mark like a mofo, like BQ would call me. I get pretty granular, but BQ has been doing the podcast so long, you've actually developed some relationships with different people within the company. You've been invited to the shows as a member of media. You've actually had some really cool backstage, like scoops and information. You get, like, if there's some kind of chaos going on, you're able to get some of that information and be able to relay it to the audience without an agenda, which I think is cool. Like, you're not out to like make them look good or bury them. You're just, you know, agenda free kind of reporting that you've been able to do for a long time. You've done a great job. And last time we had you on here, was our number two podcast of the year. Ibu beat it. Ibu is a monster. So that's he's tough to beat. But it was when Scott, you know, you had all that information about Scott D'Amore, about his departure, and we were able to break all that down on here. So everybody go back and check that podcast out. But, you know, what's been going on with TNA, man? It seems like they got a big transition coming up in 2025. They're taking some big swings. We're going to talk about the big dates that they have coming up and the big events coming up that they have booked for 2025. But, you know, what's been going on with that company? What does the outlook look like in 2025? And what do you see coming down the road?
First of all, I've got to point out, so last time when we were podcasting and I got on here and I was very hard on Scott, and I was very harsh in my words when I was saying, he was fired because they did not think he was good. I said, there's more people getting fired because they do not think they're good at what they do. And, you know, I sound like a crazy at the time or whatever, but, you know, I don't remember when we did that podcast. It was several months ago. Like, you look at it now, and all these things are starting to come to fruition, because, you know, what I said was they said the production upgrades were coming at the top of the year. They didn't come. I said they're probably coming next year, which they've been, you know, we're getting there now. But I said, hey, the venues, I was like, these bitches are already booked for the most part. I don't remember who's in charge of the venues, but, like, I'm pretty sure that person was released.
Lou DeAngeli was in charge.
Okay.
And he had most of the venues booked out through the end of the year. And so it took them a while to be able to change the venues that they're booking, because they had already had like agreements with those places. So, like, through attrition, they've actually started to book nicer venues towards the end of the year.
Right. And, you know, like I pointed it out with Bound for Glory, you know, they were promoting, hey, it's one of the most visited cities in the world. And they're like, oh, it's Detroit, you know? And
yeah,
it's not a knock on Detroit, dude. I'll visit Detroit. I love cities in that area. But, you know, I don't know if I did a good job of explaining it at the time, but I was, because there's a lot of things that information I'll receive, but I can't repeat it. So sometimes I struggle to find the right words to kind of communicate things without giving too much away.
Yeah.
And, I was trying to say regarding Bound for Glory that I think they had a different plan in place and they weren't able to see that through, because certain people who were talking to certain people don't work for them anymore. And now they're reestablishing relationships and they're reestablishing agreements. And that's why, you know, it was kind of a shit show around Bound for Glory time. But yeah, all that stuff was kind of booked throughout the year. And now you're seeing, now that these, we're getting towards the end of the year and into next year, you're just seeing this huge shift in mentality. And I think it proves what I was saying about, hey, Scott and these guys were not as good at their jobs as people thought they were, as the fans thought they were, because we're seeing the companies in a better place now. It's significantly in a better place.
Yeah.
And we're very far, you know, you can chop that up to Scott at one point, like, back in March, April, Scott was, you know, here a couple months ago. Like, now we're at the end of the year. And, you know, what I was trying to communicate to you guys, what was told to me, was that people who know how to produce television are being brought on. And the NXT partnership was also about, how do you guys produce television? It wasn't just a talent exchange. It was a knowledge exchange too, or TNA probably wasn't giving them knowledge, but they were.
I don't think they need TNA's knowledge.
Yeah. that a lot of the relationship was a lot of like, hey, how do you guys do TV? How do you do live TV? That's been something they've been like learning for a while now. So, you know, it wasn't something they could just pull out their ass. Now we're saying, hey, January, it's happening, but it's something.
So, yeah, because since TNA,
they're working towards,
since AEW hired their director, brought him over to they brought TNA's director over, the guy that had been directing TNA for a long time, their head of production. His name escapes me, but he worked with WCW forever. He was worked with World Class. He worked with WWF at one point. But they brought, and now he's doing Maple Leaf Pro. But they brought him over, and TNA hired Dave Sahadi, and Dave Sahadi wasn't fit for the job. Dave Sahadi could do certain things. Being a television director was not one of them. And it suffered for a long time. And it seemed like there's a little bit of cronyism going on within the company with Scott D'Amore as the head of it, because you had Dave Sahadi in a position that he's probably not qualified for. You had Josh Matthews probably taking some online classes on how to promote shows and doing production and stuff like that. And, you know, sticking around forever. And you had a lot of people that probably, you know, shouldn't have been in the positions they were in. And finally, Anthem had enough of it, gave Scott the axe, gave Lou DeAngeli the axe, gave Dave Sahadi the axe. And slowly but surely, they're starting to kind of resemble a pretty well-ran company. Now, I say all that to say that, yeah, the outlook for 2025 looks like it's going to be pretty big. They have some stuff up their sleeves. They're taking big swings, clearly. However, the creative has not improved. I think the creative has only gotten worse, to be honest with you. What's going on with the creative team over there? Is there something is there some turmoil within that creative room? Is nobody in charge? Is there no quality control? What's going on there?
So I'm not going to say turmoil, and I'm not going to lie. I probably haven't had this conversation in a couple months.
Okay.
Just what was communicated to me, and like the best way that I can put it was that no one's in charge, and it's booking by committee. And when that happens, everyone's got to agree on something. And there's just been angles where, you know, I guess there's some people saying, hey, we want to do this. And some saying, hey, we want to do this. We want to do it this way. We want to do it that way. So, you know, creatively, I think I said this on the last show, they had to do Scott's creative through the Orlando taping. So, and I said it, you said it at the time. We're like, man, this Orlando taping feels like Impact Wrestling.
Yeah.
You know, like from the crowd, the energy, the vibe, camera angles, creative, it felt like Impact. And then we got through Orlando, and that's when stuff started really, really cooking. But at the same time, you did have Scott, you know, I guess being the head and saying, hey, we're going to do this, this, and this. And I would imagine they've got to have someone in charge. Like, it cannot still be by committee at this point, but you know, but yeah, last I was told it was just that, just kind of butting heads, but I don't mean like in a way of turmoil where it's like, fuck you, no, fuck you. It's, we wanted to do it this way. No, we want to do it that way. So, I mean, that's kind of the way that was told to me. And we could feel that on television.
Yeah.
And you can still feel it now, you know, when you get Zach Wentz with this shotgun title reign, and he doesn't even get a rematch.
Yeah.
You know, and I joke about Laredo Kid not getting his rematch. Like, you see, like, there's all these little holes creatively that they, you know, they do things when it's, there's certain things they find convenient, and then there's some things they don't. And they're just like, it's definitely all over the place this year, but yeah. Hopefully January rolls around and that changes.
Yeah, it's very inconsistent, and it feels like there's got to be like four different factions. There's a faction that is tied to their WWE roots, and just absolutely loves and adores Nick Nemeth. They just think that he's the greatest, despite the fact that he clearly has not drawn a dime. There's a faction there that really does believe in Joe Hendry and feels like he is the guy to go with. It appears there's another faction that really likes Mike Santana. And then now we got another guy in Steve Maclin coming along where it feels like there's some people behind him too. Oddly enough, a few of those guys are actually at Final Resolution going to be in a four-way, which I'll get into Brace for Impact this weekend. But it seems like the right hand doesn't know what the left hand's doing. Nobody's really on the same page. There's not a ton of synergy. At least that's what it appears to be on television. There's no clear number one star at this point. And Nick Nemeth is the world champion, but he does not come across as the top star in the company. And in fact, he actually missed half of the Fayetteville tapings because he had to take a small indie booking in West Virginia in front of like 150 people. So the world champion is not completely fully committed to the company at this point. And they have all these people, and the only ones that are drawing any money are Joe Hendry and the Hardy Boys. Now, I think everybody clearly agrees that the Hardy Boys, like Jeff Hardy, is probably the top star in the company. Like, he's probably the most popular. Yeah. The Hardy Boys are the most popular act, and Joe Hendry is like right there with them. I just hope that, you know, come 2025, they always take time off at the end of the year. And usually in early January, we start getting some like announcements of different types of changes that are happening within the company. And I'm hoping that we'll get to start seeing that come like the first or second week of January as we head into, Genesis. Now let's talk about 2025. Genesis is going to be in the Dallas Fort Worth area. And they're running the Colwell Center, the Curtis Colwell Center. That's like a 7,000 seat arena. A few days later, they're going to be in San Antonio, Texas, and they're doing like 2,000. That's a 2,000 seat arena. They've sold that one out before. And also later in Texas, they're going to El Paso in March, it looks like. And that's a 10,000 seater. Although it says on Google, it says a 6,500 for wrestling. They're going to St. Joseph, Missouri. I don't know how big that one is, but I know that's a nice venue. They're doing that in March. In April, they're going to a 10,000 seater for Rebellion at the campus of USC, the basketball arena there. That's a 10,000 seat of the Galen Center. And then they're running the freaking UBS Arena in New York City, which I believe is the home of the New York Islanders. I want to say it's the Islanders. That's where they play. That is a 17,000 seat arena. Last year, AEW and New Japan Pro Wrestling ran that, and they did 11,000 people. Now, earlier this year, I said I was challenging them to go bigger. I said I wanted them to take some big swings. Guys, that isn't what I was talking about. So you might have taken a really big swing there, and I hope it pays off. But that seems like a scary proposition for them to be able to fill an arena like the UBS Arena that can hold up to 17,000 seats. I think Meltzer said that it might be, like, for pro wrestling, it might be 13,000, just depending on how you set it up. But that's a huge venue. What do you think about them taking these big swings next year?
You know, it's definitely bigger than what I was expecting.
Yeah.
I've never been at the USC arena. For those who don't know, my wife and I were USC fans. We're actually, we plan on going to see a women's basketball game within the next, probably next month. We're trying to go. So I'm going to go check this arena out, hopefully.
Yeah.
We were watching a game on TV the other day, and it was a middle of the week game against one of these, you know, Christian universities. I mean, they beat them by like 100, and there weren't a lot of people there. So it's definitely one of those arenas they can get away with tarping off a good portion of it. And it still sounded okay. I mean, we could tell there was not a lot of people there. It still sounded okay. It does scare me because, like, you're watching these AEW shows, and as much as maybe not you, like AEW sometimes, I've pretty much fallen off with it after 2 years ago. From the inception, for the first 3 years, I thought it was the best wrestling show on TV. It wasn't my favorite, but I thought it was the best. And now I think it's like the worst. But you see it on TV, and even, like, as much as we clown it, they still have more people there than what TNA has. Yeah. It's just that TNA books better venues. But if you watch some of these clips, if you don't watch a show anymore, you watch the clips on YouTube, it sounds empty as shit. And they're talking, you know, we got 2,000, 3,000 people there, which for AEW, it's really small, but that's still a big crowd for TNA. Like, we're celebrating if they have 3,000 people there.
That's a home run for TNA, but AEW is doing it in basketball arenas, right?
Right. So,
but they did actually start, I believe it was starting this week, they actually ran a smaller venue, like a 5,000 seater, and they had a couple thousand people there. So this week's Dynamite actually looked really good on TV.
Yeah,
lights were brighter. You could see the crowd. The sound was better. The crowd was hotter. They were in Bumblefuck, Indiana, of all places, but they still were able to get a pretty decent sized crowd there. And it looks a lot better. So they're taking the strategy of, like, reducing their arena size to fit the demand, because that's what they had. It's like a supply and demand situation. They're booking these big arenas and they just couldn't fill them. So now they're just booking smaller ones. And I'm sure they're losing their ass on the live gate. But the AEW is playing a little bit smarter. Is what TNA is doing smart?
I guess we're going to see, because the one thing is they've been booking some slightly bigger venues recently. And I've been scared about those.
Yeah.
They've pulled it off, you know?
They've gotten bigger. It seems like they've been incrementally booking bigger and bigger arenas throughout 2024, and they've just been hitting each benchmark, right? So, right. In the summer, they were still doing, ECW Arena and then that place in Chicago that they run. And then all of a sudden, they decided, you know what, for Slammiversary, we're going to throw this on PCO's back. We're going to go to Montreal in a 5,000-seat arena and see what we can do. And they pulled off 3,500. That was the biggest crowd they had done in forever, right? And then so they got, screw it. We'll go ahead and try something big for Bound for Glory. And they book a 3,000-seat arena, and they sell the damn thing out. To my shock, right? In fact, right. I was so shocked that they actually sold 3,000 tickets at Slammiversary. I still am the only man alive that wears a Big Con t-shirt. I wore it tonight in honor of me having to eat shit one day. He doesn't actually have his own t-shirt, so I actually made him one.
Right, right.
And I sold it to myself.
Entire time.
Yeah. Yeah, I sold it to myself. So it seems like they've been taking a little bit of chances here and there, which I actually think is pretty smart, right? Like they're not just going straight to the UBS Arena. They're like working their way up there. But I think David Bixenspan's in the chat, and he says, "Wait, TNA booked what?" Yes, David. booked the UBS Arena of all places for Slammiversary next year. I don't know how the hell they're going to fill that thing. I don't know what they're going to do. I think they're going to have to sign whatever big name free agents available. They're going to have to do some type of gimmick. They need to get Lethal Lockdown, Ultimate X, Elevation X. They need to bring in all of Japan and Mexico on this thing. They need to do something, because that's going to be a tough one to sell.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully they prove us wrong. I mean, they have to know what they're doing at this point. I would imagine they look at numbers and we're projecting, hey, we're setting these benchmarks, as you said, and we're doing this and this, so that, you know, they've got a graph, they've got a chart saying, hey, we're going this direction. We can do this. So, man, I hope.
Yeah. I don't know. I like that they're taking big swings. I was just like, God, I didn't mean that big, guys. Come on. But you know what? Like, go big or go home. They're going big. We do have a man. The chat is lively tonight because you're here. And so I apologize, guys. I'm not able to get to everybody's chat. Eli Samuel Rosario has a question. With TNA running stadiums, brother, they're running arenas. Stadiums is like what AEW is doing for All In and what WWE is doing for Royal Rumble, like outdoor big stadiums. They're doing basketball arenas, but do you think they have a bigger distribution deal in place? Matt Hardy's been hinting at it for a while that TNA is actively working on a distribution deal. I've been hearing the same goddamn story for 5 years. Ever since they've been on Access, they've always been working on a new TV deal. And I gave up on it years ago. I happen to think they just like being on Access because they're never going to get fired. But it does seem like for them to book the UBS Arena and for them to book a couple of 10,000 seaters, it does seem like they might have something up their sleeve.
Dude, I've only asked one question before about, what was it you had me ask? It was in regard to Full Sail.
Full Sail.
Yeah. But I was just kind of hit with the no comment.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they have planned in regards to that, but in regard to like these distribution deals and stuff, I haven't really asked much about that kind of stuff, but yeah, I'm in the same boat as you. We've been hearing that forever. I did a podcast the other day and someone asked, do you think they'll ever get off Access TV? I'm like, I don't really know how, because I know they're doing good numbers for Access, but they're not doing like good numbers. I mean, there's nothing about their TV show that any network could be like, yeah, let's pick it up. I mean, we've seen NWA say, hey, we're getting a deal. And then these are smaller companies, but yeah, it falls through. MLW's like, hey, yo, we're getting this deal, falls through. Like they're not getting the, you know what I'm saying? Like I understand TNA has a little bit of a bigger audience, but it's not that much bigger of an audience. I would just imagine their conversations aren't that much different than MLW's conversation with a bigger network. Like I have a real, real hard time. And we're seeing Rampage and Collision on a bigger network not do that good, you know?
No, so. I think they were in like the low 100s over the weekend, yeah. And which is crazy because TNA on Access just like 2 or 3 weeks ago did 108,000. And Rampage, I think Rampage is like 125 and Collision is like 145, something like those numbers could be off by a little bit, but it's like they're not that far off. And TBS and TNT is in like twice the amount of homes as Access TV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wild. So because people always say, well, it just needs to get in front of more eyes, but I think there's the TNA fan base feels that if it's in front of more eyes, that it's going to be doing 300,000, 400,000, 500,000. And when you're talking about, I know they're the B and C shows, but when AEW really does have a much bigger fan base and they're not hitting, I just cannot see TNA doing those numbers. Like, I think where they're at is just where they're at. I don't know. You know, I would imagine their DVR numbers impact people who are watching TNA on demand. I would imagine those numbers have shot up quite a bit.
Yeah.
But it's like baby steps. Like, I know they're working with NXT and all these things, but people have their TV habits already for the most part.
The thing about TNA is they can't get people to regularly view their TV show because it's on a channel that nobody has, and nobody's really going to upgrade their cable package to get that channel. It's not even available on YouTube TV. That's what I have. So I actually watch through the app. Now the app works really good, actually. Like, it's like, that's been like the big for me, like them selling more tickets and their app actually being usable and working properly, like almost like 90% of the time. That's been a huge thing for me. But you know, like, there's just so much wrestling on TV. I don't think there's a demand for another major program on a bigger network. I just don't see the demand. But I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. I do think it's possible that they think that they might have something coming up if they feel like they're running these shows. I think they're doing better tickets because Joe Hendry and the Hardy Boys got hot at the right time. Joe Hendry has a lot of social media support. And the Hardy Boys, if you put the Hardy Boys on a billboard and people like our age that watched them when we were teenagers and the tickets are like $25, you're probably going to go and take your kids, right?
Yeah.
Like if the Hardy Boys are on like the local news and like, oh, wrestling's coming to town here in bumblefuck New North Carolina, Fayetteville. It's like, oh, okay, I remember them from when I was a kid. I'll take the kids over there and watch that. The tickets are $10 for general admission. So I think that's a lot of it. So I hope they didn't overestimate their thing, but I applaud them big time. I'm not trying to crap on them. I'm just trying to have like a realistic outlook. I commend them for taking a big swing like this. I never thought that they would do it. And I never thought that they would accept my challenge of trying to sell 5,000 tickets in 2025, because that's something that they just have not done in forever. But now that they've accepted the challenge, I'm kind of worried that they might end up losing their ass a little bit, but fuck it. Take a big swing. Anthem's a $1 billion corporation. Let them spend the money.
And you know, and I got to say this too. I think you have alluded to this before talking to some people, but I've been to two TNA shows this year, strictly because they came to Vegas, but Rebellion and Hard to Kill. And then I did the Snake Eyes tapings. I don't believe I did the TV tapings after Rebellion. No, I did. So I did the TV tapings for both. There's a lot of people in the crowd that do not follow TNA.
Yeah.
And I think you've said this before, cause some people have told you there's conversations around me, even Rebellion. I think that's the one I was like front row, and in Hard to Kill, I think I was like third row. Even that close, there's people completely clueless. I was third row for Hard to Kill. This guy was texting in front of me, but he's holding his phone up kind of high so I could read it, and I could tell he knew nothing about TNA. He's like, oh, I'm giving him a shot. You know, there's a lot of bad comedy, and you know, I just saw him like, you know, but there's a lot of people there don't watch it. So you know, the Hardys, the Joe Hendrys of the world, yeah, they are kind of drawing them in. There's definitely a lot of casual fans. You don't necessarily hear it on TV because TNA is a much better in-ring product from a storytelling standpoint than I'll say AEW. Because I've told the story before. My family and I mean, there's four or five of us. I don't remember who all went, but we went to AEW Collision, and my wife and my son said, this is the worst wrestling show we've ever been to. Because as casuals, they're like, we don't know who the bad guy is. We don't know who the good guy is. And even like my son at 16 was like, they're just doing moves. Like he doesn't know wrestling like to that extent. He doesn't know what storytelling is and stuff like that, but he knows that how to consume the story when it's being told. So yeah. I take my son and my daughter to, we're going to a freaking high school gym wrestling this weekend because Kenny King's wrestling. Where I've taken them to shows like that before where they don't know anybody, and there's just simple storytelling, good guy, bad guy, protagonist, antagonist, and they get into it. In AEW, they just didn't. They're just kind of back and forth doing moves. Like, we don't, they weren't taking in the story. So
they didn't know who to cheer for. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then my wife, like, it was a match. It was, and who's the fat black dude, with the trucker hat, the ROH guy,
Shane Taylor. You're going to give me so much heat for saying that.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
He wrestled, Danny Garcia, and my wife was like, why isn't the big guy whooping his ass? Like, she just could not wrap her head around that and why he didn't win the match, you know? So, my point is TNA storytelling, even if you go there as a casual and you don't understand maybe who the wrestlers are, their storytelling does draw you in. So you're not like, it's not like dead, you know what I mean? But there are definitely a lot of casuals in there, but you would not believe, you wouldn't know that by the way, you know, the crowd reacts to things.
Pretty clearly right away when you're watching a TNA show, you don't have to be watching every week. You kind of know exactly who the protagonist, who the antagonist is based on the match. It's very simplistic. They're not really trying to challenge your thinking at all. I think AEW does that. Sometimes I think they overdo it. I happen to really like the way AEW does it. I like the fact that they have, you know, good guys versus good guys, bad guys versus bad guys. Some people are shades of gray. I think it's a more, I don't want to say upper scale. That's not what I meant, but it's a bit more of a complicated form of storytelling that I happen to enjoy. Right. I don't need things like dumbed down for me, but when I watch with my daughter, the first question she asked me, well, Daddy, who's the bad guy? That she literally does ask me that. Like, who's right. The bad guy? She asked me that during UFC, and I have to tell her, like, honey, this isn't fake. I was like, there's no good guys and bad guys. Unless, you know, McGregor's fighting. So, I get where you're coming from. I still like, you know, what AEW is doing. I know they've had a really tough year, and hopefully they can bounce back this year. But one thing that they have not been able to bounce back from is the loss of CM Punk. That shit just keeps continuing to haunt them. There's some more news coming out about that. We're going to talk about that in a second. Hey, chat, if you guys want to stop us dead in our tracks, throw down a super chat. If you got more TNA questions and TNA stuff, wait till the end, like the last 10 minutes of the show. And I'll try to get to everything, but we're going to cover some other topics here. But chat, thank you for being here. Burt Macklin, thank you for being here. They're not going to CW. Sorry. I love you, though. That's not happening.
I see a comment here from the Nerd Network podcast.
Say Nerd Network podcast. Hold, let me see. I want to pull that one up.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Bro, that must have been a while ago.
It was like two down. It's exactly two down from that CW one.
Oh, there it is. All right. He says, I'll be going to the Missouri Tappings. The Midwest loves wrestling. Definitely a market that TNA needs to start waving their flag in. Yeah, they're going to St. Joseph. That's near Kansas City. My cousin Joe, who's been on the show before, is going to be there. So there's lots of cities like St. Louis, big wrestling town. I've actually gone to events in Kansas City, St. Louis, Springfield, Missouri. I've gone to in Rolla, Missouri as well. I've gone to TV show or wrestling shows all over there. You want to address it, BQ?
Yeah, I want to address it because I just kind of want to double down on what he said. You know, I mentioned earlier I live in Las Vegas, but I've only lived here a year and a half. I lived in the Midwest for 8 years. That's actually where I wanted to stay, but my wife wanted to move out here. So I lived in Illinois, but I was on the border of Missouri. So I actually worked in St. Louis. And I was in St. Louis a lot. I went to independent shows in St. Louis. I went to NWA would come to St. Louis, and like NWA would pack that place. And
yeah.
And we had one indie show. It was in Illinois, but it was outside of St. Louis. Like I said, I was on the border. That's where I met Rohit Raju, and we became friends. But he told me, he's like, yo, this is crazy. Like, he's telling me, he's like, this is crazy. He's like, this it is so hot here, this crowd. This is not the norm for these indie shows.
Yeah.
You know, so it is a great market to hit up. That is, it's really weird to me that more people don't. Like, I went to a lot of WWE there when I first moved to Illinois, when I watched WWE, and I mean, they would go crazy for, you know, Randy Orton and a couple other locals they had. But it is a great market that's very untapped.
Yeah, I completely agree. I lived in Missouri for 4 or 5 years, went to lots of shows out there, but it was also over 20 years ago. That was before I joined the military. But let's get to this other story, this CM Punk story. This AEW CM Punk stuff just will not die. It will not go away. There's a story that came out from Fightful Select. Now, Sean Ross Sapp said that he obtained a document from a source that is saying that Ryan Nemeth had filed an HR complaint against CM Punk in AEW. I'm not saying that he obtained it through an email with Ryan Nemeth, or maybe he was like in a parking garage in the dark, and he was handed some documents like under a lab coat or something like that. But all the person that also gave it to him in that dark parking lot had to have been Ryan Nemeth. But let's just say he got it from an unnamed source, that he got this very detailed complaint. But it says former AEW star, now I think he's a TNA guy now. I mean, he's been on the show. He's actively involved in storylines. But AEW star Ryan Nemeth formally filed a complaint detailing allegations of harassment, threats, and unaddressed grievances involving CM Punk. The complaint, which Fightful Select reports was sent to multiple AEW executives in September, outlines a series of incidents Nemeth claims AEW failed to adequately address. He also alleges Punk had an undisclosed executive position within AEW, which I think has been out there for a little bit, at least alleged to a long time ago, further complicating the dynamics of the situation. So Nemeth's complaint includes extensive documentation such as emails, texts, and call log as evidence of his allegations. He claims the issues began in April 2023 when he first expressed concerns to then AEW legal representative Mega Parekh, who is now gone from the company, about being targeted by Punk. This was reportedly due to Nemeth's close ties with the Young Bucks, who are embroiled in their own tensions with Punk. Nemeth alleged that after tweeting about Punk being the softest man alive. So here's the thing, Ryan. You started this shit. Yeah. Like, you went, your ass went on Twitter calling him the softest man alive, and then he confronted you for it. But now he's the jerk. Now, he probably didn't do it in a nice way. He's probably a bit of an asshole. But let's be honest with who started the whole thing. You were the instigator in the situation. So when you passively aggressive say something about somebody in public who is not a passively aggressive person who will confront you in person, which is the proper thing to do, maybe not like in a threatening way, but if somebody's talking shit about you in a passive aggressive way, like, you have to know that eventually that's going to come back to you. The problem is you weren't being protected by the Young Bucks in the situation. Well, I got some more to read here, but I just had to stop it right there. Following Punk's return to AEW in June 2023, he was confronted and threatened backstage by Punk. And despite initial reassurances from Parekh, Tony Schiavone, and others within AEW that his position was secure, Nemeth alleges that he faced retaliation. He was not booked for 2 months following the altercation, leading him to fear that he had been silently fired. He was a day rate guy. He was like a per date guy. He wasn't really a contracted talent. Parekh reportedly assured him that he still had a job, but Nemeth claims that actions taken during this period suggested otherwise. So he was actually flown to a collision taping, which Punk was kind of in charge of, only to be removed after Punk reportedly objected to his presence. That sucks. I don't think that should happen. Nemeth claims the incidents prompted him to contact Parekh again, pleading for action to be taken. Shortly thereafter, she was booked for an episode of Dynamite, or he was booked for Dynamite, where AEW allegedly requested that he cut a promo taking shots at Punk. God, this company. This further escalated tensions and led Nemeth to file his formal complaint. Parekh ends up leaving. They actually at one point offered him a non-disclosure agreement for his silence. And then when Punk got fired, they pulled that non-disclosure agreement. They're actually going to pay him 3-year salary, apparently, for that. He is now a TNA contracted talent. What in the absolute hell is going on over there in AEW?
Bro, first of all, I want to say regarding their product, for me, it went downhill when CM Punk left, because I think CM Punk had a certain way of like, hey, this is how wrestling should be presented. And when he was fired, I think Tony Khan and them said, hey, we're going to double down on what we think we're going to show them our way is the best way. Yeah. And we're going to double down. Cause that's kind of what I think happened overall. Regarding this story, you know, I saw someone on Facebook today, Ryan Nemeth. This is always, everyone always uses this. He's trying to be relevant. No one cares about relevancy that much to put in this kind of effort. This is pretty detailed stuff. Yeah. And I know that we're very much in a society where you want to believe your narrative is correct. The other narrative is wrong. We see it in politics. Like, you like Trump, everything Trump does and says is correct. You hate Trump or you like, we'll just for sake of argument, say Joe Biden, you like him, everything he does to say is correct. There's very few people in this world that live in the middle.
Yeah.
And so wrestling fans, they hear these things online and they're always making this up. I am under the belief when these stories come out and they leak that they're like 99% correct.
Yeah.
I personally believe that. I'm not one of those people who are like, yo, Dave Meltzer is a liar. I think Dave Meltzer receives incorrect information and doesn't double check.
Yeah, that happens.
You know, I think people do that to him on purpose. Eric Bischoff has said he's done it to him on purpose.
John Bradshaw Layfield said that they did it to him all the time. Just try to like intentionally feed him false information so that way he could ruin his own reputation.
Right, right. But as far as like all these stories that come out, like because I live in the middle, I'm an independent voter. I'm not a bandwagon sports fan. I like the teams I like, and I don't really care if other people don't notice my hat. I believe these stories are like 99% true. There's always their version, you know, in relation to someone else's version, but I'm not under the impression that these insane stories that leak, you know, all these AEW stories that they're not true. Because take the CM Punk backstage incident for a second. All this information leaked about it, and then the video came out, and it was exactly the information that leaked.
it was pretty damn close. Like, now CM Punk was the hero of his own story,
right?
It was like it was pretty close to what he said it was, though. Like, there were some slight differences there, but and CM Punk is a notorious leaker of information to the media.
But there were, I forgot whoever the hip hop artist that was there. Maybe it was Rick Ross. I don't.
No, it was the guy that was actually at. He actually did the TNA show. He was with AJ Francis. It was the guy who's on Shade 45.
Oh, DJ Who Kid.
DJ Who Kid. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He told a version of the story, and his was exactly from what he said. It was not the best story in the world, but the points that he did say that were clear was exactly what. You know, he said Samoa Joe was the big Samoan guy was here and this guy was here, you know. So yeah. I put a lot of stock into what Ryan Nemeth said, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I absolutely believe that's what happened. Like, he went on Twitter and said what he said, and Punk confronted him about it and was probably a flaming asshole about it. But he has to be honest with who started that. That was him. Now, he has come out since then saying he was just trying to impress his friends, but like, you fucked with the wrong guy. It's like, and then you end up getting yourself fired over it. Like, that's the top guy in the company, right? What do you think would happen? You're a Chargers fan, right? What do you think would happen if the punter for the San Diego Chargers or LA Chargers, decided to come out and talk shit on Justin Herbert? Right. What do you think is going to happen? They're probably going to have a new punter that week. Like,
exactly.
You know what I mean? So that's the equivalent of this. Like, Ryan Nemeth was just kind of a guy who's friends with the Young Bucks and was able to get dates with them. And then he's out there talking about CM Punk. Now, I did have the Nerd Network podcast has actually a good question. It goes, do you think Ryan got set up backstage to be the guy to make to push CM Punk's buttons to cause drama and paint him in a negative light? I don't think there's any other way to read that other than they were trying to get him to piss CM Punk off so CM Punk would actually swing on him at the next show. Now, ultimately, it ended up being Jungle Boy who was able to get under his skin enough to get Punk to be able to do that and got himself fired. But there were forces within AEW that were out to get CM Punk to push his buttons, to get him to go crazy, to get himself fired. And it worked. And guess what? He deserved to be fired because he allowed his buttons to get pushed. He wasn't professional enough. But I think the lack of leadership in that company is what exacerbated this entire scenario. He never should have had that much power to begin with. Your top star shouldn't be booking one of the TV shows. He shouldn't have power over, you know, whether or not guys are on the TV and all that stuff. He just shouldn't have had that much power. And ultimately, everything just got way out of hand. And it's because so many people lack the leadership skills to be able to confront situations and get them to stop before they get too big. Because they are afraid of conflict and afraid of having conversations. That's why this thing got way worse. The Young Bucks never talked to him again. They could have came together after the fight and had an amicable resolution, but instead they decided to talk through lawyers, and the situation only ever got worse and it never got resolved. And that's why we're still talking about it again today. Now, I don't understand why this report would leak at this time. And some people are like, oh, this is just, you know, somebody was saying that this was WWE PR leaking the information to make AEW look bad. It was like, that actually made CM Punk look bad, who is one of WWE's biggest stars. Yeah, I don't think anybody in this situation looks good. I think AEW leadership looks bad. I think CM Punk looks bad. And I sure as hell think Ryan Nemeth looks bad out of this whole thing.
Yeah, man, I don't feel like it was purposely. I mean, Ryan Nemeth definitely leaked the information to Fightful, but let me pull back on that, because it'll be contradictory. Yeah,
we don't know that for a fact, by the way.
No, we don't. I do think that he probably, I think he may have leaked the information saying like, this stays between us.
Sean's a pro. I don't think Sean's running with it unless he has permission. I think it probably got leaked because they never found a resolution to the issue, and he got fed up with it and wants help getting a resolution to the issue, wants communication. And there hasn't been enough communication. And that's been another issue with AEW, is that they're not communicating with the people when they do have these problems. And so he probably felt that this was the way to be able to find a resolution to that situation.
Yeah, I guess that's possible. I don't know what resolution he's necessarily looking for.
I don't know. Well, at one point they offered him 3 years pay in a non-disclosure agreement, and they pulled that because Punk's fired. So maybe he wants money. Maybe he wants an apology. Maybe he wants them to admit that, yes, that they just – that you know, whatever happened. I don't think that it does him any good to bury CM Punk, because one of the producers for TNA is CM Punk's best friend. And Ace Steel, and Nemeth is working TNA right now. He's doing jobs on the undercard, but he's still working there.
Yeah. And I'm just glad he didn't use the terminology bullying, because the minute someone's like, I've been bullied, I personally don't believe them. When I say I don't believe them, I mean, once you start using that word, I'm like, okay, this is 90% your version of the story, not something in the middle.
I absolutely believe that bullying stuff exists, and it can happen with someone when the power dynamic is so great, right? Because could Ryan Nemeth whoop CM Punk's ass? Probably. I you know, he's from, like, him and his brother were, you know, they wrestled all through their life, you know, like Nick Nemeth was like a high level college wrestler at Kent University or Kent State University. Like, so I don't think there was like a fear of being bullied again or being beaten up physically, but someone can use their position power over you to bully you into, like, you know, doing different things and stuff like that. I think that has existed in pro wrestling forever. Now, was that this situation? Well, thankfully he didn't use that term, probably because he didn't want to like seem like he was getting like physically bullied, right? Because there's different types of bullying.
I just, yeah. to me, bullying always means you're allowing the behavior. You don't know how to stand up for yourself. You're or afraid to stand up for yourself. Like what he's saying, what is he saying? Harassment.
Yeah. He was saying harassment. He did. So the thing is he did stand up for himself.
Yeah. Right.
And he was trying to do it in a professional way by using AEW's HR team. And AEW's HR team essentially is non-existent because they didn't really fix the situation. They just got rid of him. Right. And they never addressed the problem with Punk. And they allowed Punk to kind of run rampant until he physically assaulted somebody else. Dave Meltzer said that more of these stories are coming out. There was other people that had these issues. Matt Hardy was another guy that he was outspoken against Punk, and he showed up to a collision taping, and Punk wouldn't let him work. Punk sent him home, right? So more of this stuff is going to come out about Punk's behavior there in AEW. And Punk is absolutely at fault for being that way. AEW is absolutely at fault for letting it happen.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason CM Punk stories have been leaking about him for years. They don't just, there has to be, with like there's smoke, there's fire, you know? So,
yeah.
And I like him. I'm a fan of his, you know?
Yeah.
But I also do think that there's a lot of truth to this stuff. I think that, but with the stuff with the Bucks, I think they were just, hey, this is our company. And now this guy's coming in and trying to take over. You know, I think there was a lot of that. I would imagine when they release their story side of the story one day, I would tend to believe CM Punk's is more accurate. But I don't know, man. I'm interested to see when more of this information comes out, who else speaks up, because what's real interesting to me, and this is on the flip side of the coin, that those who like CM Punk, they seem to be held off TV right now.
I mean, FTR is still around, but they haven't been the champs in a while. And I think Brody King was one of those guys, a big CM Punk guy. He's actually getting a push now.
Thank God,
because I think he's fantastic. They're for a little bit. I think they're probably kind of slowing down some of the CM Punk supporters within it. But they didn't get, as far as I know, they didn't really fire any CM Punk supporter other than Ace Steel, who's now a producer for TNA. So
yeah. There's a couple that Tony really likes, like Willow Nightingale and stuff, who I think was real cool with Punk, but he loves her.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't love her? She's fantastic.
I have my thoughts. I think she's very dangerous in the ring, personally.
She's beating up people, that's not my fucking problem. I find her.
She's very great character and a great
. Oh, hold on. We're getting corrected in the chat. This is why I love the chat. They always keep me on my toes. Ricky Starks was apparently one of those guys, but he's also a big Cody guy. And Ricky Starks has been held off TV for apparently creative issues within AEW, not wanting to do a storyline with W. Morrissey. I'm still calling him W. Morrissey. I do not like Big Bill. I think W. Morrissey is a better name. He's being held off TV for all of that. And then transferring, he says Danhausen, Starks, mm-hmm. Miro. Yeah, Miro's off TV now. Danhausen's been off for a long time. There was like a story going around that he was selling like his own AEW merch like like on his own without AEW getting a cut of it. So I think he got a little bit of heat or something like that. I think that was like a story like that was out there. But yeah, he's been off TV for a long time. So these guys are just getting paid to sit home, which I think is probably the best job in all of professional sports, is just to get a contract with AEW, get a little bit of heat, and then get paid to sit at home for a couple of years.
Yeah, no kidding. I wonder, like in Ryan Nemeth's case with 3 years of salary, what does that look? I mean, I would imagine they're guaranteed dates. I know TNA guarantees dates, but
yeah, it was probably, he was a per date guy. And so they probably would have said, here's how many dates you would have worked over the course of 3 years. We'll pay you this amount of money. Probably just to not say anything bad about Punk.
Yeah. But I don't think, I mean, obviously AEW doesn't hold people to their dates because they just keep people off TV.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
But if it's their choice, the thing is, if it's their choice to keep you off TV, they have to continue paying you. Right.
Oh, like, fair enough. Yeah.
You're on a guarantee with them. So you get paid whether you show up or not. And so that's where all that stuff's coming from. So like there's a lot of people, but TNA does the same thing. Like when they fired Michael Elgin a couple years ago, they didn't actually fire him. They just kept him off TV and paid him for two more years while he had all of his stuff. And then the stupid idiot tried to sue them afterwards. Like, you idiot, they paid you your entire contract. But he's an idiot in a lot of ways. But
he lived really very close to me in Illinois.
I remember that
when I talked about the indie show that I said me and Rohit started getting cool at, was Michael Elgin ran this promotion at the time, but when everything happened, they had to like buy him out or whatever. But he was running a hell of a freaking show, I'm telling you.
Yeah, well, I guess Glory Pro was pretty popular for a while, but
yeah,
Elgin had to ruin the whole thing with all his bullshit.
Yeah, it was more there was more people there than like TNA easily.
Yeah,
it was hot. Yeah,
yeah. Dude, Elgin used to pop in my DM sometimes, and I was just like, why is Elgin trying to talk to me? And he was trying to get me to be on his side with that whole lawsuit thing. He was like messaging me about it. And I was like, bro, how's your sobriety? Cause I'm in sobriety. So I was just like, how is your sobriety? He goes, I'm doing really good. I was like, well, God bless you, man. Stay sober. Like, I kind of just gave him one of those messages. But he used to every once in a while just message me. Bick says that AEW pay an extra for AEW taps out at about $800 or so per appearance. So it has to be higher than I'm pretty sure like Ryan Nemeth, buddy with the Bucks, is probably getting a pretty good deal to show up to those TV tapings. And he was like on the shows. He was like losing a lot and he was doing stuff in the crowd. So he was like, he was not a guy or anything, but he was like on the show a lot. And then David said, yeah, they never actually said that TNA fired Elgin. Dumb people just thought they said they did. That was some wrestling reports went out that they said they did. But really, they just, same with Joey Ryan, they just took him off TV.
Yeah, right.
Because they didn't really have, I guess because there was nothing like filed, like there was no maybe legal stuff filed. It was the Me Too movement, speaking out movement. They just removed them from TV and continued to pay them out their contract. But that's like pretty standard stuff. Like if they don't have like legit grounds to fire you, they won't. They just have to, they'll pay you whatever your downside was for the remainder of your contract.
Yeah, I bet that 800 number is pretty accurate, because what I was told by a wrestler was that TNA pays like $200 for an appearance.
I could see that.
On the low end.
Yeah.
There's been people on TNA television, like legit on TNA, making $400 a month. So like when those numbers come out, like, oh, they make $5,000 a year, there's some people who really fucking do.
Yeah.
But then I was told when they went and worked at AEW, they got double that. So they said they got like 400. So
right.
I would imagine the contracted per day talent. Yeah. That sounds right. Like doubling that number.
Yeah. Now I'm getting fact checked again in real time. It turns out I'm constantly talking out of my ass. I'm just going off like memory from a few years ago, but Bick said that they actually did fire Ryan and Dave Crist, not Jake Crist. Man, poor Jake Crist, man. He got a lot of heat because of his brother. Dave,
yeah, man.
Dave was a unrepentant asshole. That guy. But Jake was actually, he got pulled from TV. I think just by guilt by association.
I was.
They ended up bringing him back for a little bit. He actually just worked the Fayetteville tapings. He was in a tag team with Allen Angels.
Yeah, I was. It was right around the time I stopped doing interviews, but I was getting ready to interview Dave Crist for the channel right before that happened, because I was a big fan of his at the time. I actually liked him better than Jake. I know Jake was a popular one, but yeah. I mean, I'm very contrarian, so. I actually liked Dave at the time, but he has completely fallen off the face of the earth.
Yeah. Well, for good reason, that guy was pretty terrible to a lot of people. You are a contrarian. You're a fucking Clippers fan. You're a San Diego Chargers fan. Like, now that they're good though, that's going to become popular. You're going to have to switch teams. But because they're actually pretty good now. Indiana Fever. But what are we talking about? We're not going to do Fever anymore.
Dude, I don't know, man, because I became a fan because they were bad. I lived in the Midwest, so they were. I decided between them and Chicago. Chicago was good at the time. Indiana was bad, so I went with Indiana. But they're like a bandwagon team now. That's just not the way I do my fandom.
Yeah,
you know, like if I say tell someone I'm a Fever fan, oh, sure, I went to a Las Vegas Aces game here, and I had my Fever gear on. I'm like, oh, you know, people are, they're joking with me. They weren't like heckling me, but they're just kind of like, oh, Iowa fan or something. I was like, dude, I'm been a fucking Fever fan this whole time. They're like, okay. You know, so I'm just like, you know,
you were a Fever fan because they were so terrible. They had the number one pick. They were able to get Caitlin Clark. That's how big of a fan you were.
Back to back number one pick. Shit.
Yeah.
And number two the year before that. And I think the two the year before. So yeah. And I like the Angels over the Dodgers.
You're a TNA fan. Like,
yeah.
You're just kind of always going for like the underdogs and always probably like, you probably like a lot of the events that have really cheap tickets, which is why you stuck with like TNA and like, and the Clippers.
Yeah. When I went to the Indiana, every year in Indiana, I go to the big convention they have, and Miro walked past me. He's a Clipper fan. So I saw him, he saw me, and then he like double take cause he saw my hat and you know, and then we started chopping it up. I'm like, you still love the Clippers? He's like, hell yeah, Clippers. So, yeah, he's a Clipper fan. That the young buck, the blonde one, he is. So,
yeah, young buck number one. So I was actually God, I can't remember the name of the hotel, but a really nice hotel in San Jose. I went there during WrestleMania weekend. I got a deal on Hotwire, the Hotwire app. You know the how like they just talk about like the good deals. They had a hotel that was like $500 off for a night. And it was in downtown San Jose. I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to go watch NXT tonight, WrestleMania the weekend. I'm going to go do that. And I get to the hotel. It's a WWE hotel. And I just somehow was staying in the same hotel as the rest as of all the wrestlers. And the 49ers were there eating dinner with like the wrestlers too. Like all like the whole defensive line was there chopping it up with everybody. And I'm just standing in line and right in front of me was Miro's wife, Lana. And then right next to me wearing a Pink Floyd t-shirt and a Los Angeles Clippers hat was Miro of all people. I remember it like it was yesterday. I was like, cause I was like surprisingly, like I was a little bit taller than him. Like I assumed he was a much bigger guy. He was wider, of course, but like, I'm like almost 6 feet. I was like a little bit taller than him. I was just super shocked. That I was actually, you know, taller than Miro, but that's my only Miro story. So I just
he's one of the cooler wrestlers I've met. We chopped it up for a while. AJ France is very cool too, by the way. But I'm 5'9". I tower Brian Cage. I tower Michael Elgin. I tower anyone in the X division. I would say like. Josh Alexander is taller than me, but we took a picture together and like, I kind of held up the fist and my buddy was like, dude, you look like you could knock him out.
Yeah.
Like these wrestlers are a lot smaller in person.
Yeah. Well, they're much smaller than they were when we were kids. That's for sure.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. But, hey guys, I think that's going to go ahead and do it. If anybody's got any questions, go ahead and fire them off. I haven't really seen any questions, but. Transferring, he says, Miro to TNA. You know what? I don't think that's too crazy, to be honest with you.
Yeah, he flat out said before he's like, I had a meeting, they were cool, I just didn't want to go there.
Well, I mean, AEW was hot at the time.
Right.
You know, that like, and he came out looking like Thick Shady. He had like bleach blonde hair and a white t-shirt and some jeans.
Oh my god, yeah, that was really weird.
And he was like a video game guy.
Video game, yeah.
Yeah. So but yeah, guys, I think that's going to do it for us. BQ and I are going to record something for his channel. So stay tuned for that over on the Impact Lounge. Go to YouTube and check out the Impact Lounge and follow BQ on Twitter at BQ Speaks. Make sure you like this video. Give us a 5-star review, subscribe, and throw me some money. Patreon.com/TheMikeAndJD Show. That's how I keep getting permission from my wife to be able to do this stuff, to talk to my stupid friends on the internet about dumb wrestling. But I happen to really enjoy it. And then be on the lookout on Patreon. I dropped my latest Witching Hour, where I'm getting into weird stories. The Witching Hour. I dropped one about J. Edgar Hoover's original X-File, his original unexplained file about the Beast of Glacier National Park. And then this weekend, I'm actually going to record one about DB Cooper. So be on the lookout for that. And then, of course, Brace for Impact will be out on Saturday. Lots of stuff to talk about in the Impact world, more than what BQ and I just talked about tonight. So everybody go check that out. All right, guys, that's going to do it for us. And until next time, mahalo.
Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A made no rain from the track when we...
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rich, and if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now, you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.